Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as we'll help others to learn about Autism Stories. Tim Chan joins this episode to discuss finding connection, visual thinking, and being the first non-speaking autistic person to give a TED Talk. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Tim, thanks so much for joining me today. And I wanted to start off our conversation by learning, where does your story in the autistic community begin?
My travels with autism started officially with my diagnosis with autistic disorder at 3 years old, with severe developmental delays in all areas, including communication. I lost speech at 14 months of age and have not been able to speak since, despite speech therapy and other interventions. My challenges, including sensory perceptual and information processing issues, movement difficulties and high levels of anxiety, meant that I often failed to understand the requirements of everyday activities or routines. All I remember of my early childhood was one big jumble of confusion, with huge problems in figuring things out. As I began early intervention in kindergarten at age 3, I could see that there were typical kids who could talk and do things, as well as other kids like me, the minority, who lacked the ability. I was frequently frustrated as my autistic differences prevented me from learning in typical ways. My challenges, including not being able to talk and failure to do the simplest things most kids my age master naturally, have always made me feel like an alien from outer space. Because we lack the ability to speak and communicate on our own, people find it hard to understand how non-speakers experience the world. This means that non-speakers are frequently seen as incompetent or unable to think and feel like most people. I went through a long and arduous journey to achieve the means of communication and fortunately, at the age of 9, was able to learn assisted typing with support on a speech generating device. It was through FC that I was able to engage with people and play a more active role socially. But progress is often 2 steps forward, 1 step back, with roadblocks from my own neurological challenges as well as attitudinal barriers.
A common theme on Autism Stories is how we as autistics find connection, find community. However, when we do find connections, they don't always last. Now, you wrote a book, Back from the Brink, Stories of Resilience, Reconciliation, and Reconnection, The Hero's Journey Through the Minefield of Autism. What strategies have you found to bring reconnection in your life?
Connection comes from understanding people in the world, and for non-speakers, pivots around our ability to communicate. I had a long and fraught journey to achieve communication. From an early age, I didn't understand the sounds people make at a communicative function. As a visual thinker, the world comes into mind as images, and even interventions like speech therapy as well as applied behavior analysis from the age of 3 onwards failed to help me understand the symbolic nature or the functions of language. Around age 6, I began to experience success through a different program my mom designed to meet my learning needs, with music, pantomime and concrete material dovetailed to my interests and strengths. This program, based on my favorite activities, was an enjoyable learning experience, and I began to grasp language and other essential skills. As I progressed, I was able to use a self-taught technique to communicate in language, with a game of pairing words with their photos in translating speech into images. With this process, I began to understand the meaning of words and the symbolic nature of language. By opposite process in translating images into words, I was able to use expressive language around the age of 7. Thereafter, with a renewed understanding of the world via language, I was able to make sense of people and their behavior. At 9, I picked up facilitated communication or assisted typing with the physical, emotional and regulatory support of a facilitator. With FC, I was finally able to connect with people and engage with the world. Currently, with around 8,000 hours of practice over the years, I am now typing with minimal physical support, hand on shoulder or back, and have since relied on FC for navigating life.
At 18 years old, I believe you are the first non-speaking person with autism to give a TED Talk. Being the first, I'm wondering what type of feedback you got from those that have watched your talk.
It was serendipity which provided the opportunity to do a TED Talk. My mentor Krish Bhani, the autistic founder and CEO of IcoMedWork, found out about an opening at TEDx Melbourne in 2013 and sounded me out on whether I was interested. Because the TED Talk needed to be done in a relatively short space of time, I was dubious at first. I had never given a presentation before this time, but could not turn down this offer as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So I geared myself up and worked around the clock with fantastic support from Chris and others to write up and polish the talk. I had to steel myself to go on stage, but I didn't want to disappoint Chris or John, the curator of TEDx Melbourne, as well as my family and myself, and so I did my best to focus and was able to type to complete my talk. I was completely drained afterwards, but happy with being able to pull it off. There were two types of feedback, positive and negative. It was great to learn that my message on how my support network, which believe in my ability and potential, enabled me to thrive and succeed, had reached people. One lady said that watching my TED Talk helped her get out of bed in the morning. That's fantastic to know. The other kind of feedback, mostly negative, consisted of doubts cast on me, mostly the anti-FC group, which questioned my ability to type on my own steam, and whether what I typed came from me. This presumption of incompetence, that non-speakers are intellectually not up to scratch, has been used to routinely deny non-speakers the right to communication using their preferred method, and I have learned not to take it personally.
What would be your advice to other non-speakers if they wanted to pursue being a speaker at a TED Talk?
I have never aspired to doing a TED Talk or any notable public speaking engagement, as I have been riddled with lack of self-confidence in encounters of discrimination and exclusion at high school. But the opportunity was there and I seized it. The process of preparing and presenting to a large audience have given my confidence a boost and hope that I can be successful. The thing is, non-speaking autism is not well understood, and so it's important for people to know that we are also capable of success. This experience has taught me that we need to revise our own self-concept of being unable to do well to being able to achieve our goals. I have also learned from the neurodiversity movement, which reframes autism as differences in brain wiring and as natural variation in the diversity of human experience, as well as pride in our autistic strengths. It is the self-confidence in the belief in ourselves that enable us to set high standards, to strive and reach our goals.
Now, we all want to flourish as adults, to be successful and to be happy. I read where you wrote that we need acceptance, authenticity, and autonomy to make that happen. So when specifically thinking about authenticity, especially for those with complex communication needs or severe challenges in speech and language, what do you think are some ways to bring that authenticity to their lives?
For non-speakers, authenticity comes from being and functioning in alignment with our sensory and other needs. Because of our hypersensitive nervous systems, information processing and movement challenges, as well as fragmented body awareness, we often need to do things that calm us and provide relief from overload. When we deal with incoming sensations which are often too intense for comfort, our instinctual responses to protect our sensitive nervous system frequently result in our failure to conform to social expectations and standards. For instance, I find water very soothing and spend a lot of time in the shower or turn on the garden hose for quick relief. I would have no qualms in getting thoroughly soaked in dripping wet clothes. Our strategies for self-regulation may be looked upon as odd, socially inept, or even unacceptable, such as continuously flicking light switches, obsessively touching things or twirling strings. But when we get too concerned with conforming to social expectations and refrain from doing things which help us self-regulate, we often become overloaded and unable to function. So being authentic to ourselves means meeting our needs for calming and soothing. In other words, when we engage in these so-called repetitive or ritualized behavior, we should not put undue pressure on ourselves to stop these so-called times in order to meet socially acceptable standards.
Now, Tim, from what I understand, you are a visual thinker. In what ways have you used your strength as a visual thinker to improve the quality of your life?
Information from the world for visual thinkers comes in images, and we use the visual input in association with different strategies to process for meaning. For instance, the meaning of language comes through for me with matching words to pictures or scenarios. For output or self-expression, I do the opposite by translating images into words for typing. This process may sound complicated, but through trial and error and practice, it has become instinctive and efficient. We pick up things visually and these memories are attained, even prior to typical children with language, which kicks in around 2 to 3 years old. So our libraries of experiences can be quite extensive. I have a near-perfect memory. Through practice, I can scan my comprehensive library for the information I need quickly. This skill, as well as a related ability to see things at different angles and in combination with various frames of references, translate to more creative ways in doing things. For example, I often put together different perspectives in resolving a problem, unhampered by responses which are language-based, and can check beforehand whether the solution is going to work by visualizing the future outcome. I believe Temple Grandin also uses her superb visual skills in analyzing and designing in 3D.
And how can our listeners learn and connect with you beyond this interview, Tim?
There is a couple of ways, through my website, timchin.com, or via Facebook.
Lastly, is there anything that we haven't discussed that you would like to talk about?
The incidence of autism has increased from 1 in 2,500 in the 1960s to 1 in 32 in 2023. This dramatic growth is accompanied by some stark figures. Autistic people experience lower educational attainment, decreased economic and social integration, higher rate of poverty, and poorer physical and mental health, with suicide rates 3 times higher compared to the general population. Around 1/3 of all autistics are non-speakers, with severe challenges not only in language and speech, but also issues in sensory perceptual domains, information processing and movement or praxis. Non-speakers face even worse outcomes in these major living domains, as well as additional comorbid conditions, including epilepsy, anxiety disorders, etc. Because we are a sizable minority, it is important that our voices are heard, and inclusion for non-speakers is on the social and political agenda. The motto "Nothing about us without us" must be upheld. Because we don't speak doesn't mean we have nothing to say, and we should have a voice in decision-making in our lives. The most important thing for non-speakers is acquiring a means of communication, which is essential for our connection with people and navigating life in meaningful ways. I would like to see alternative and augmentative communication methods acknowledged and respected as another way to communicate. Communication is a basic human right and the essence of what makes us human. With communication, social connection is possible with a sense of belonging to our human family.
Thanks so much to Tim for the conversation. To learn more about Tim, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what has worked for them, about the things that they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to get the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories, and if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, it would be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Bletcher, Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.